Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Ai Weiwei is China's most celebrated artist and a passionate dissident. Today, a conversation about the man who's the subject of a new documentary, Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. We'll visit with the film's director in just a minute. Later on this hour, a look at the latest art, documentary, and foreign films with our film critics, including The Queen of Versailles. And our film critics today are film professor Cynthia Haynes, the Queen of Versailles herself.
No.
KCUR Steve Walker is also here. Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
And Bob Butler, who writes about film at butlercinemascene.com. He works at the Kansas City Public Library.
Robert, greetings.
Good morning. Nice to have you. I'd like to welcome Allison Clayman onto the show. She's director of Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. And Allison, good morning. So nice to have you.
Good morning. It's great to talk with you today.
Well, this struck me as such an important film, Allison. I'm guessing you feel the same way, too. Why?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's one of those films that kind of intersects with something that's really topical, you know, the situation for Ai Weiwei. It's an ongoing kind of story, and he's definitely been facing a lot of trouble from Chinese authorities. And you know, right now, China is a story that, of course, is always on everyone's minds, and there's a lot of hopes and fears pinned on the future of China. But it's also something bigger than that. It's a story of freedom of expression and the power of an individual to influence hearts and minds, affect change through creative dissent and a little bit of courage.
You know, why did the Communist government of China allow you to make this film to begin with? I just was really taken by that.
It's a great question. I'll take a page from, you know, if you asked Weiwei something like that, you know, you definitely have to ask them rather than me for the real answer. But, you know, I've always kind of assumed that they might not necessarily have known what I was doing the whole time. You know, I lived in China for 4 years, and I was working on this film for the last two of them. I was also an accredited, you know, foreign correspondent. So I was certainly, it wasn't, you know, unusual that I was, you know, traveling around with a camera. And I did spend a lot of time with Weiwei, but, you know, there were tons of journalists that, you know, might spend time with him. Curators, writers, you know, people from galleries and museums. And I just kind of assumed that because I'm also, you know, kind of young and I wasn't really working for any major news outlet at the time, I was more of a freelancer, that kind of no one just thought I was that important. And maybe, my project wasn't immediately apparent to the people who were kind of monitoring Weiwei himself. You know, for all they knew, maybe I worked for him. That's always been my guess, but I guess I honestly don't know the answer.
Bob Butler, hop in here.
Allison, this is Bob Butler. Listen, you know, I think a lot of us in this country, because China in recent years has embraced elements of capitalism, that it's almost like living in the United States. That's probably an illusion, but I'm curious. On the ground, day to day, how aware are people of the, I guess you'd have to call it, intellectual, artistic, political repression, as opposed to the wide open, apparently, capitalist free market thing they've got going?
No, it's a great question. And I mean, it's the kind of thing, you know, there's a one of the people who I interviewed in the film, this quote isn't in the film, but it always sticks with me as a great answer. You know, China isn't China until it's China. Meaning, like, as a sort of daily, you know, your daily life, you can go, you can get Starbucks, you can, you know, eat at McDonald's, you could get, you know, very expensive food, you could go see Men in Black 3. I mean, you can kind of live your life and really not run into too much interference. It's really a couple ways that you can be kind of reminded very quickly. You know, I think it's when you are trying to express something that, you know, is not a popular or sort of an approved kind of thing, you'll run into problems. If you have an injustice kind of done to you and you run into the legal system and you realize that there is pretty much no rule of law, you know, you'll kind of be reminded. If you try to log on to Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, you'll be reminded that, you know, the internet is not what it is outside of China. So, you know, I think that there are many realities that can, you know, exist within one in life in China. I certainly really enjoyed living there, though. I mean, despite the problems, and I would definitely argue that is a way that you could also describe, you know, life in the U.S. I mean, there are plenty of injustices that kind of, you know, that can come down on you if you're of a particular background or trying to do something maybe that is more controversial. Yeah. But you can also kind of go about your day and it doesn't hit you in the face until it does.
Well, Allison, why hasn't Wei Wei been arrested and even silenced by now?
Right. I mean, that was, you know, one of the driving questions for, you know, this project and following him for so many years. How many people do you meet that within the first week of knowing them, you're compelled to say, you know, why aren't you in jail?
Yeah,
I mean, that was like
right.
a question that was on my mind from the beginning, even when I just knew a little bit about him. And in a lot of ways, you know, the film, in showing the reality of the last few years for him, it really, you know, shows not just kind of an oppressive regime or sort of someone being silenced. What it really shows is how much one person can accomplish. You know, he does have a very loud voice that he uses to great effect, and not being willing to, you know, he encounters interference, right? He's beaten. He is, you know, his studio is demolished. He, you know, runs into all kinds of, his blog is shut down. He's put under surveillance. But the point is, it never stops him, and that's why the story kind of keeps going. You know, last year he was detained for 3 months, essentially, you know, in a secret location, and he continues to fight some spurious charges of economic crimes, and you know, is fined millions of dollars. So it kind of shows you that, unfortunately, you know, the story, as I was following it, I thought maybe this is a story of you know, the fact that you can keep going, you know, that there it's about the space in China where you can dissent and you can push when you have the kind of the guts to do it. Unfortunately, you know, the story did take a turn, and the last really kind of year and a half is a little bit more what you would expect in terms of a state trying everything it can to really crush someone.
Right. Cynthia Haynes has a question, Allison.
Allison, you've made a fantastic film. Could you recount for our audience members the basic story here? What is it that he does or did that so offends the Chinese government?
Sure. Well, it definitely, it starts out, the film starts out kind of in the wake of the Beijing Olympics and the Sichuan earthquake. So in 2008, you know, Wei Wei was someone who helped design the Olympic Stadium, the Bird's Nest, for the Beijing Games, and then very loudly and, you know, kind of infamously spoke out against the Games. He said he would not attend. He would not, you know, attend his beautiful and sit in his beautiful creation because he really felt that the Games were not about China moving towards more openness and international values, but rather a propaganda show sort of for the world and for its own citizens. And you know, that, I think, was sort of the beginning of this man who's already a world-famous artist, very well-known in the art world, kind of showing up in the news section of the paper, if that makes sense. He's also really active on blogging and social media. And after the Sichuan earthquake that was, you know, incredibly devastating in May 2008, he wanted to do something to commemorate the children who died in schools that collapsed. And actually, there were starting to be hints that these schools were actually, it wasn't just natural disaster. There was faulty construction, you know, from pretty much from local corruption that led to all of these schools that were built in recent decades, you know, coming tumbling down when buildings next to them were still standing. So he put out a call on his blog that had, you know, tons of followers, and he had volunteers going around and collecting the names of students that died in this earthquake, which the government refused to release. And, you know, when he published those names on his blog on the one-year anniversary of the quake in May 2009, that's when his blog, which was amazing. When I first met him, it was still up, and I was amazed that he wasn't getting into more trouble for what he was writing. But, you know, soon after, in May 2009, it was shut down. You know, surveillance cameras were installed outside his studio, and kind of the movie just continues on from there. It's a lot of that kind of back and forth, Wei Wei doing something, the government pushing back, him continuing forward.
Steve Walker?
Yeah. For our listeners who don't know his work, I want to say we've got a couple pieces of his on our website, like the ceramic sunflower seeds that he filled the turbine room with the Tate Modern with. There were millions of them. But this man works in all kinds of media, Allison, what do you think he does best, the confrontational work or his sound work or his sculpture? Because he does so many things.
That's a tough question, because you're really right. I mean, he's really maybe best known for kind of large installation works, but he also does photography. He often works in different traditional materials or traditions, whether it's furniture or, you know, woodwork, using old temple doors or ancient pottery, or using a town that used to make ceramics for the emperor instead to make, like you said, 100 million hand-painted, handcrafted porcelain sunflower seeds. You know, I think it's tough, because I think to kind of pick which I like best. Obviously, you know, I think that the provocations and the, you know, online organizing and statements that he makes to the press, all of that, it has an extra kind of enticement to in terms of it being really just relevant and current, and it's, you know, immediate, and it speaks to people's lives. I think that the artwork is in a lot of ways, it's a little quieter, it's a little more, to me, it's gorgeous, and it's a little bit more mysterious. You know, it's not as in your face, like, what is the political statement of 100 million porcelain sunflower seeds? Well, there's a lot of things you can read into that. When Ai Weiwei writes an essay in Newsweek that says, entitled Beijing is a Nightmare City, there's less you can, like, interpret into that. I think that's a little more direct and kind of telling you what he thinks. And so for me, I think what his best skill is, instead of maybe picking one strand, is really, to me, it's sort of like he's multilingual. He's able to communicate in all these different ways, you know, whether it's highbrow, sort of fine art museum context, whether it's in mass media, whether it's, you know, in the form of a really scathing, you know, four-word tweet. I mean, I think that he's really able to figure out the best way to respond or to communicate in all these different forms.
You know, we're visiting with Allison Clayman. She's director of Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, the new documentary film. You know, one thing that struck me about him, Allison, is he really does the vision work. He lets others actually create his art. How unusual is that?
Well, from what I understand, in terms of kind of contemporary art, it's not so unusual these days. And, you know, an artist like, you know, like Koons or Hirst, you know, might have, like, many assistants working for them as well, you know, when you kind of create these very large installations. And I think also modern processes and technology kind of allows for works to be made on that kind of a scale, where you might need some form of, like, technician or other people to kind of help. In China, I think that's kind of part of, it's almost like, kind of relying on the natural kind of resources as well, because if you think one of the things about China, you know, one of their best resources is manpower. And so I think part of it is also, sometimes it's part of the work, you know, the idea of these, you know, hundreds of craftspeople working on those millions of sunflower seeds, you know, the scale is part of the statement. But I also think otherwise, you know, Weiwei, really is someone who likes to work collaboratively and likes to engage other people to kind of participate. I also think ever since the early 2000s, when he really kind of had his own architecture practice as well, he's kind of an amateur architect that became really hot, and that's why he worked with Herzog and Demeron, the Swiss architects, to help design the Bird's Nest Stadium. But I think once you're also having, like, an architecture studio within your firm, I mean, it's very unlikely that you're going to be one person.
There were a couple moments in this film that really caught me. Two of them were the moment when he had a woman speaking on camera talking about the impact that Weiwei's had on China, and sort of his whole purpose is to help people become individuals within a society like China's, which I thought was such a profound idea. And then later on in the film, there was this very touching scene, maybe halfway through the film, with Weiwei's mother, who is so worried for her son's safety, and he just tells her that, you know, all her worry is pretty much unnecessary. It almost struck me as if he was blowing her off. You know, was he?
I know, you know, that's a scene that I think it's one of those that's really in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah,
because
right.
I have some people who watch it and say, you know, kind of feels like he's blowing her off, you know, and
yeah.
kind of cold. And then there are other people who watch it and say, you know, he was really so tender and just trying to
right.
kind of alleviate her worries, and it hurt him so much to see her like that. You know, I think there is also a little bit of, you know, an element, you know, from family dynamics that I witnessed, and so it's really only kind of anecdotally, but, you know, friends that I had in China, you know, I definitely didn't feel like it was an overly kind of sentimental kind of, you know, way that people would act towards each other.
Right.
So I can definitely read that as sort of, you know, as a maybe a mixture between the two. I mean, I can definitely see the care in there as well.
Yeah.
It is a really touching scene, and I think it is really interesting that, you know, people kind of experience it in different ways. I don't know what the answer is.
Allison Clayman's our guest. She's director of Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. Cynthia.
Allison, Steve Walker and I saw your documentary at the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri, which is a wonderful, wonderful film festival. I'm just wondering.
So great.
I'm glad to hear you say that. number one, the value of film festivals. But number two, is documentary filmmaking taking over the role of journalism today?
Two really good questions. I mean, well, first of all, in terms of film festivals, yes, True False is, was, you know, definitely one of my top, if not the top festival of the year. It was a really great time. And I think that film festivals, what's really great about bringing them around, bringing your film around to them is, I think, the enthusiasm of the audiences, because it just seems like, you know, any city that has, you know, a film festival that's very beloved, you know, you're really getting some people who are just passionate about the films and have been excited, you know, sell out crowds. I think that's something that's really nice. And for me, it's always nice to meet other filmmakers. That's why True False was so great, because I really got to spend a lot of time with other filmmakers there as well. And, you know, for not every film is as fortunate, you know, to get a theatrical release. So sometimes film festivals are the best way to really rack up as many, you know, audiences, you know, eyeballs seeing your film as possible. And I think, you know, in terms of journalism and at True False, I think I participated on a panel that was kind of about that, sort of the, you know, nexus of journalism and documentary film, and with some other filmmakers who are kind of straddling those two worlds. I think there is definitely a difference between documentary film and journalism, but I personally I also kind of have always viewed documentary as a chance to do really quality, but also maybe slightly more kind of artful, maybe taking a little more liberties, you know, journalism. I definitely think that you should be bringing journalistic standards and like codes of conduct to documentary film. That's my personal opinion, whether it's, you know, respect and sort of concern for your sources and their safety. I think, you know, you can't say, oh, I'm a documentary filmmaker, so I don't have to, you know, worry about those kinds of responsibilities. I think you should bring those to the work. And I also think, you know, verifying your information and making sure things are true and accurate. But at the same time, you get this opportunity to tell a story in a more cinematic way, in more depth. And for me, I think it's a chance to get to follow a story for a really long time in a way that these days, journalism doesn't really afford you as many opportunities, unfortunately, to do that kind of long-form, really open-ended kind of questions following a story that you don't know where it's going to go.
Well, Allison, thanks so much for your time today, and we all wish you great luck and success with Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. It was so good to have you today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited that it's opening up there.
You bet. All the best, Allison.